tree. The wise are loud, the big black crow, flap for their wings, singing go bird go. Rock and Robin, sweet, sweet, rock, rock, rock and Robin, sweet, sweet. Go Rock and Robin, come to really go.
Welcome everyone to another edition of Community in Depth, and that theme music means we have on the phone with us, guess who it is? Jennifer Veith, the Executive Director of the Carpenter St. Croix Valley Nature Center, and she has all sorts of great things she's going to tell us about. How goes it? Happy December!
Hard to believe we're in December. It feels like Oct-December or something. It's beautiful out.
You know, it is beautiful, but yet we know that it's December by the temperature. And I know that you are in the middle of, is it a shutdown? Is it a lockdown? How are things being affected by the new governor's mandates with your
there's
work?
There's a few things that are affected, but fortunately we can keep our trails open just like normal. And right now, so much research shows that spending time out in nature is good for your mental, physical, and emotional well-being. So we're just thrilled that we can keep our trails open. We have restrooms open this time. In the spring, we didn't know if that was safe or not. We have a set of restrooms that people can use when they're visiting, and it's just great to be able to provide that service to the community. Our in-person programming, where you gather with a group of families to learn about cool things, those are on hold for a bit, but hopefully as soon as the COVID numbers go down a bit, we can start those back up safely.
Oh, and I bet you really miss going out and doing your outreach.
Oh, my goodness. My naturalists, all the teachers, I think they're in withdrawal. And it was really hard to tell our volunteer greeters that we had to close the visitor center temporarily for everybody's health and safety. They just look forward so much to sitting there at that front desk and greeting all the friendly faces that come through. So as soon as it's safe, we'll get them back in there because we love to see all the smiling faces at Carpenter.
And are you completely done with apple season? Because I know one of the apples goes into November, doesn't it? That last, is it last kiss? No, that's first kiss.
First kiss, yeah. But yeah, we normally, in a normal year, we can have apples. If it hasn't been a hard freeze, we can have apples until Thanksgiving easily. And this year we had that really cold week in October, and it just annihilated our late season varieties. Most of our firesides were frozen solid, and once they've been frozen, if you've ever had an apple that you freeze and you try to thaw it, it becomes mush.
Oh.
So yeah, it was really unfortunate. It shortened our season, but we thank everybody who came out early in the season and snatched up those amazing apples. Our Honeycrisp, our Sweet Tangos, they were just phenomenal. Our team did a great job this year. And well, we appreciate everybody visiting and buying apples. It helps us keep our doors open.
Oh, I bet it did. Well, how are you doing as far as your animals that live at the Carpenter St. Croix Valley Nature Center? Obviously, outdoors, those animals are kind of on their own. But you have a lot of ambassadors, don't you?
We do. And our amazing team of naturalists have been going in every day and feeding and caring for them. But we had a few great surprises this year. One was we got to provide a new home for the raven that used to live up at Wolf Ridge. And due to the pandemic, they couldn't house her anymore. So we had a donor step up and build her a new home. And so you can visit her every day we're open at the Nature Center. So she's on exhibit right now. And then the Raptor Center had a barred owl chick come in, and she's blind in one eye and wouldn't be able to survive on her own. So we're rehoming her, and she'll be our future education ambassador. She's just quite the little character. She reminds me a little bit of Baby Yoda.
You actually sent us a picture of her, and she's just darling. And she looks kind of harmless, but owls are raptors, right? So
yep, they're birds of prey, and barred owls are ferocious predators.
They are
owls we don't like to see when we're doing our solid owl research. They'll actually eat other owls. They'll eat mammals, birds, reptiles. They mate for life. They nest in a tree cavity, and they'll actually defend their territory year-round. So they look sweet, and they like to blend in with the trees and not be noticed, but they can pack a wallop.
Does your husband know that you brought this bird home?
The story was kind of fun when we figured out that we would need to have some intense training time for her. And he walked in the door and took one look at my face before I even said anything. And he said, no, absolutely not.
So how big is the little cutie? Do they grow pretty quickly?
She's full grown, and she's about a foot and a quarter tall and has about a 3-foot wingspan. She's been hanging out watching TV with the kids so she can get used to having people around. And she's adjusting really well. She couldn't care less about our dogs, so that's great, because a lot of education ambassadors develop phobias over dogs or strollers or anything like that. So she's adjusting really well, and I can't wait till we have programs and we can introduce her to our visitors.
So what you're doing right now is what somebody else would do typically at the center, or do you always bring animals home, or is this unusual?
It depends on the situation. So this year, with not much happening there and staff working remotely, this made the most sense so she could get adjusted to people. But other times, like with our eagle and with the raven, their training's happening where they are. The eagle was in training for the past 2 years. The raven has already been trained up at Wolf Ridge, so her adjustment is easy. Abby just goes in and does all sorts of cool enrichment behaviors with her every day to keep her educated and alert and happy.
So because she is blind in one eye, how does that impact her as far as flying or other things?
She would have trouble with depth perception, and when you have to catch really fast, wily things like mice and other birds for a living, you'd definitely starve to death because you wouldn't be able to capture things well enough on your own. When you look at her in that photo, her eyes look perfect, which is great, so she shouldn't develop any difficulties as she ages, but that she gets all the food and care she needs, so she doesn't have to worry about hunting and navigating tree branches and things like that.
And what do you think happened to her eye?
That I don't know. And I don't know that the veterinarians know. They just know it didn't perform the way an eyeball needs to perform with regulating light. Mm. It could have been an injury from when she was first out of the nest, or it could have been genetic. I don't know that they know that.
So you brought her home, and then what? Because remember, I've brought a bird home before, and it had disastrous.
We talk about baby birds, Mo.
You told me that we're not supposed to do that, but because you're an expert, I guess you get a pass to do that. But so tell me about what happens. I mean, had she ever been around people before?
Exactly. That's a great question. So her life with people up until then had been pretty scary. You know, she's on the ground as a young bird. She gets rescued by a giant two-legged alien and then brought to this place that check her out and look at her eyeball. And so right now, when she came here, humans were pretty terrifying. So the first 2 weeks was really her just having a really quiet room with almost no noise and no human activity, and just all the tasty mice she wanted to eat, and just going slowly from there. So now she's at the point that she'll step up onto a glove and you can walk around with her and she watches the world go by. Eventually she'll get trained to step into a crate just like a dog will travel in a dog kennel so that we can go to schools and visit kids.
So how do you start that whole training process? Are they motivated by food, by praise?
These guys aren't really social in the same way a parrot is, so praise doesn't really work for them. Mostly it's just pairing things that they are comfortable with or want, like tasty mice, with us being in the vicinity.
Stop it.
So I guess not everybody thinks mice are tasty, right?
They taste like chicken. Oh, good gravy. Okay, so she's motivated by tasty mice. So you leave your doors open at night so the mice can come in. What? How does this work?
We get our mice from a place that produces them just for raptor food or other food. Some of those companies have great names like Gourmet Rodents. So my freezer and my fridge are kind of gross, but you put the mouse down and you just hang out really quietly and try not to disturb her. And when she's comfortable near you, she'll eat the mouse. And then that makes the time that she's near you that much more positive. And then you just increase from there, making sure that she's comfortable, because you don't want her to be afraid of people. So that's just how It sounds easy, but it just takes a lot of time.
I bet it does. And how often are you working with her every day?
Depending on the day. So when she was first here and could be comfortable around kids, my kids had the best assignment in the world, sit and watch TV next to the owl for like 6 hours a day. It was terrible.
How can my kids get a job like that? So that was the first part. And then it's this just getting them used to you putting a glove on or you getting nearer. But how do you really teach them to do these things?
That's a great question. It's sort of one of my old jobs. I got to learn a lot of this. And some of it is just slowly, you know, with having her step to the glove, it's having a little tasty piece of mouse on the glove. And she'll want to take the mouse with her beak. And when they pull apart a mouse, they use their feet to hold down a chunk of the mouse and they pull with their beak. So she steps on your glove to pull the mouse, like to hold the mouse so she can pull it. And then all of a sudden she's on your glove and nothing scary happens. So she thinks, oh, that's cool. Maybe I'll do that again.
How do you not scream during this?
many years of doing this sort of stuff, but I can see it being kind of weird.
Oh my gosh. My whole body is just tense while you're talking about this whole process. She is absolutely darling, though. Just a really a cutie, and how fun. This will be really nice when you are able to go out and show her off to people. How much longer do you think she'll need to be trained?
If the visitor center was open now, we could probably start teaching like one or two people with her right now, so she's that comfortable around people. But we'll probably have to wait till the COVID numbers are down, and then hopefully that's when we can start.
So are owls, are they nervous around people ordinarily, or they just don't have any experience, or can they take or leave people? If you said they're such powerful killer machines, how do, you know, I mean, that's kind of frightening.
That's a great question. So one of the things when you're training an owl, they have a different response to things that make them nervous. So owls are masters of camouflage. I can't tell you how many times you've probably walked by an owl and not even noticed it. Even bird watchers who love to go looking for owls have the hardest time finding them.
Wow.
So their reaction when something scary like a human or a dog is around is usually to freeze and get really skinny and blend in with the tree, as opposed to a hawk or something that's going to fly away and be visibly like, hey, I'm out of here. And so when you're training an owl, you have to be really careful that you don't make them so nervous that they're freezing and hiding. You know, you want to make sure it's all positive. Yeah, for her, she just, if she's nervous, she freezes a little bit. An owl in the wild would put out and try to look extra large to scare you away.
And how long do owls live?
It depends on the species of owl. So usually a larger owl like her, hopefully she'll live to be 20. A smaller owl like a saw-whet owl, those little ones we do, we monitor as they migrate, they live a shorter lifespan. So, you know, 7 to maybe 12 years.
And are you imprinting with her right now? Is that the word?
That's a good term, but it's actually once they're out of the nest, the imprinting period is done. So she's not forming an image of what her parents or future mates will be like anymore. That's already kind of, that window is closed. So you want to often avoid having a bird imprint on you, because then they're just a little more predictable. They have no fear of you. Our old owl was imprinted, and she would lie down in the glove to try to bite you to show you that, you know, it was her space. And so she was a lot more aggressive. She'd fly right at your talons first. So with this bird, she's already past that stage. So we're just getting her used to people and figuring out that people aren't scary.
And is that the owl, the other owl you're talking about, is that the one that I met before that hooted the whole interview? Is that the one?
Exactly. And she was hooting to tell us that she sees us as competition, and she was telling us she was bigger, tougher, and meaner, and watch out.
That was so funny. People thought that that was sound effects, that that really was not the owl.
She was a crazy character. She was really neat and a great educator.
I bet. And what happened to her?
She reached the end of her flight path. She passed away this year, so it was very sad.
Oh, gosh, I bet. Speaking of flight paths, can this owl fly?
This owl has its full feathers, but with that bad eye, it would probably be risky to have her free flying. So at least for the first while, she'll be like that owl. She'll have her leash and jesses, And then as she gets older and gets more accustomed to her surroundings, we may house her a different way too. Just depends on what's safest for her.
So right now when she's at your own house, you don't let her just fly around?
No.
Can I tell you? I had a friend named Lynn Marie that had a parakeet named Zachary. And Zachary had the fly of the house. And so every time I'd stop over, I'd have to call ahead and say, Lynn, can you put Zachary away? Because he would come and he'd dive on your head. And then he'd get excited and then he'd have his bathroom problems everywhere. It was the weirdest house. Yeah, Zachary. And then he passed away and she had a, I know it's not called an autopsy, but she had an autopsy done on him. And the result was he came to the end of his life cycle. Yeah.
And unfortunately, you know, they don't live forever, and that's part of the journey that you have to take with them is to support them the whole way through, and it's always tough, no matter what.
Is it true you still don't name your pets?
We don't name our education ambassadors.
Oh, no. Yeah.
What is funny, though, is all the volunteers that work with them have their own private names that they call them. So instead of one public name, because we don't want people to think of them like pets, they're ambassadors. So you can learn more about the natural world and the owls out in the wild.
Oh.
Plus, she wouldn't want to be pet or anything like that at all. But it is funny how, you know, I think our turtles, each of them probably has about 5 different names that people privately call them when they're cleaning their tanks and feeding them.
How does this owl show that she likes you?
She is not, I don't think, at the phase where she likes people yet. She's comfortable with us doing a certain thing. Like, I can walk by her, I can give her a mouse, but she doesn't hoot at people to tell us she likes us or doesn't like us. She's just comfortable with us in the surroundings. So we can just watch her behavior, her feather posture, her eyes, to see how she's adjusting and what makes her nervous and what doesn't, and just try to keep her as comfortable and thinking humans are as positive as possible.
I was trying to figure out how I'm going to get through the holidays just with the pandemic, and you bring an owl into your house, for crying out loud.
The creative staff at Carpenter are going to do a Frosty 40 to celebrate our 40th year of being in operation. So 40 miles in 40 days, and you can do the miles however you want. You can snowshoe, you can skate, you can ski, you can walk your dog. It could be your 40 for your Frosty Iditarod. 40 days and you get a t-shirt. So they're going to have all that info up on the website. The time period starts January 1st, and you have to have your 40 miles completed by March 20th.
Oh my gosh. Well, hopefully we're going to talk about that again next month. That's awesome. Jennifer, we love it when you call in, and we love it even more when you're in person. Sad I didn't get to meet your new barn owl, but we will post a picture on our KDWA Facebook page.
Can I do one quick shout out before we go?
Absolutely.
Jeff and Stacy Carlson have given Carpenter a challenge match grant. So if we can raise a certain amount of money by December 31st, they'll match it for each level. So the total would be up to $10,000 to help support Carpenter Nature Center. So all the info is on our website, and just want to shout out to Jeff and Stacy for helping Carpenter keep the doors open and keep teaching people and protecting habitat.
Great. Thank you so much for calling in today. Jennifer Veith, the Executive Director of the Carpenter St. Croix Valley Nature Center, and you are listening to another edition of Community in Depth on AM 1460 and FM 97.7, KDWA in Hastings.